You're listening to Network World Panorama, interviews with industry experts that give you a view of the networking landscape.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Network World Panorama. I'm Keith Shaw, Programming Director here at Network World. Today, we're going to talk about the latest data security threats from the world of organized crime. Joining me today on the phone is Vince Wong from Bitdefender. Bitdefender is based in Eastern Romania, and they're on the front lines of the malware war, and Vince oversees all product and technology development strategies for the company. Vince, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me there, Keith.
So, Vince, tell me what's kind of changed in the world of hacking. You guys are seeing a dramatic rise in sophisticated money-making schemes that are developed by organized crime. So kind of what's new in this world?
Absolutely. I think over the course of, say, the evolution of the threat landscape, it's become more and more of an ecosystem rather than just a landscape. In the mid-1980s to probably the mid-90s, you've got a lot of it's just curiosity and just, you know, testing things out, playing with new concepts, shall we say. But then from the 90s to the mid-2000s, you've got factions of people, coders, programmers, script kiddies, as we call it, for some, vying for notoriety, turf wars, such as, say, Netsky and Beagle, just one team against another. And then somewhere along the line, someone then realized that there's money to be had, and I think that completely changed the world of the Internet and the world of, let's say, Internet threats, or what we'd like to call e-threats, altogether. When you're looking at how things have developed in, say, the mid-2000s, you realize that the number of threats from the very high level looked like it actually dropped. But in reality, what really happened is the number of threats actually increases, but the number of noisy threats actually dropped. And so starting from mid-2004 and towards to where we are now. So now we see this huge explosion of attacks coming across the world, most of this originating from several locations, one being from sort of the Eastern European bloc, so to speak, Russia, Romania even, and then you've got China getting in on the action as well, and then, of course, then there's the traditional folks who are spread in the U.S. and elsewhere. What we do see now is a sort of maturing underground economy, so to speak. You've got people who operate very much in the same way that people would from in a regular sort of good business world that we know. And in this alter universe, you've got people buying and selling information, buying and trading items online for selling attacks. And then you've got all that turning into sort of an underground corporate culture, if you will. So if you look at several classes of folks who might be part of this underground economy, you've got the authors of the threats themselves, right? So they'll write code and sell the attacks online. They could be professional programmers that might be even hired by crime rings underground, so crime organizations. You've got the folks who are doing this on the side as freelance work, who might be legitimate programmers in their normal life, and at night they're writing things to sell online, going to underground eBay, for instance. One of the things that we do see from here is people are rarely writing things from scratch. You know, you've got a lot of recycled code that's being put out there. You've got tweaks to one, tweaks to another. You can actually go to some websites on some unsavory sites, and you can actually purchase different types of attacks for $100. That's not a lot of money, and your return on investment is pretty high. Then you've got on the other side of this economy scale, you've got the middlemen, the bot herders out there who are taking these types of attacks that's been created and spreading it out through the world, either through compromised websites, through websites that they host themselves on a bot network, for instance, and through other mediums such as spam. And the purpose of this right there is that they're trying to sort of gain as much controls over as many computers as possible to then create this sort of, you know, corporate infrastructure, if you will, from your personal machines or other corporate machines there, even, and then using that to leverage against attacks. So from that standpoint, there's a lot of activity going on. And at the end of the day, really, to make it really short, at the end of the day, it's really about gaining money. the authors then sell it for a small amount because the risk is really small. It's risk-to-rewards ratio, obviously. And then you've got the bot herders who are middlemen selling out their network, their infrastructure, so to speak, to the highest bidder on a lease, for instance, or facilitating the attack, and then taking that information and then selling it back out to other criminal organizations to leverage. At the end of the day, the other thing to sort of note is that, you know, it's not just the increase in criminal activity online, a lot of this, or the increase in just money per se, but it's also the increase in internet connectivity and the way we use our systems and connect with one another. There's more and more people getting online. There are more and more countries getting online. And as a result of that, just the population available to exploit is that much greater,
right,
which makes, you know, every dollar invested into this crime ring that much more profitable.
In terms of the groups that are doing this, in terms of the criminal organizations, are these the same organized crime groups that were, like, you know, what is traditionally known as organized crimes that were into, like, drug dealing and you know, the traditional stuff that you see in Hollywood? Are those the same groups, or is it a different type of people that are getting into this?
It's a bit of both, actually. It's really a bit of both. You've got from a business standpoint, right? You've got the traditional organizations, you know, the Russian mobs and other folks out there, having sort of a portfolio strategy, if you will. You've got the traditional physical organized crime, and then you've got this new medium of electronic internet based crime, right? Then you've got a group of others who are just, you know, a small collection, you know, your common criminals, just getting together, very loosely connected, and exploiting it. And then you also have newly formed organizations specifically focused on exploring the internet itself.
Okay, and so how does this change from kind of hackers that you probably wouldn't dream of working together, and now they're almost in this new economy and this new underground, you know, world where it seems like before you would be afraid of being captured, and now, you know, there's these formal groups that are going on. What kind of change to make that happen?
Well, yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's really, you know, pure basic, you know, human nature, and where greed is good and capitalism is better. You've got when you look at it from that standpoint, right? It's just one example would be, you know, you've got sort of the individual criminals, and then when they realize that when they organize together, sure, the risk is a little higher in getting caught, but the amount of, you know, take that they can get collectively is probably much greater than any one individual. And then based upon that, then it just makes economic sense. You've got economies of scale where one person can only do so much, but in a collection of people who are focused and working efficiently in an organization might do that much more. And so your risk-to-reward ratio kind of goes up, where you get much more reward for that type of risk.
What's the latest type of attacks that are going on? Have you seen any changes in terms of where these organizations are getting money from? Is it just from spam messages, people buying stuff through spam, or has it evolved into credit card number theft and data security theft in that aspect?
The answer to that is yes to all of the above. At the biggest forefront, so to speak, is social engineered attacks. I mean, this isn't necessarily anything new, but one of the things that kind of come out in recent past is, like, you know, you've got a lot of attacks going on. You've got the security vendors, like Bitdefender, going after these guys, and these guys try to be much more smarter about working around our systems. They try, but of course, you know, we tend to play the game a lot better. But no matter how well a solution is built, you know, there's always that risk of, you know, trying to protect the user against themselves. The risk of, say, here's an email from Grandma Jones, and you know, just to say happy birthday. Oh well, let's click on it. Oops, you know, I've just been exploited. You know, at the end of the day, when you're looking at these types of attacks, you definitely have social engineering at the root base of it. You've got attempts to disable security software that comes into play as well. One example would be Trojan.clicker.cm. Which basically is a pop-up serving piece of, you know, malware, you know, of attack. But the trick is it's designed to work around, say, Norton security, Norton's pop-up blocker. You've got these things trying to disable attacks on one side. Then you've got social engineered attacks on phishing type of emails, cross-site scripting, where you get legitimate-looking emails and links, and the user clicks on it, or you can actually go to the legitimate-looking website, the URL from the front end looks the same, and then somewhere in the body of that web browser, you're routed off to some hosted malicious site somewhere else, trying to collect and form your account information. This is then sold in an underground economy in a sort of eBay-like fashion where, you know, it goes to a higher bidder. I'll throw in 50 phone cards for the highest bidder who buys 1,000 names with complete social security number, credit card information, and whatnot from me.
Right. So are most of the attacks coming through kind of email, or is it most of the attacks happen through the websites? Now, obviously, if you get an email, usually it'll launch the attack if you click on the link. But if you don't click on any emails, for example, are you still vulnerable if you're just doing some web surfing out there?
Absolutely. You're actually more vulnerable than you think, and it's not a very comforting thought. A couple of things that can happen, right? Let's say if you use Outlook, for instance. The email comes in through a HTML format. When you open it, you don't really need to open it. Some of these attacks can occur when you're just previewing your email, say through your Outlook client. And when you preview it, what happens is your client renders that HTML message. And through that process of rendering, it's almost, you know, it virtually just processes it for you. And you can actually open up, say, a backdoor or other types of attacks where the attack can get in.
Right. Those are the attacks that scare the heck out of me, are the ones where I'm not doing anything on purpose. I'm just opening an email.
Absolutely. And of course, then you've got the other side of the story, right? You've got the web browsers where you go to certain sites and, you know, that site contains a script to exploit another vulnerability on your web browser. You know, for instance, if you're in an Explorer, unknowingly, you might be infected. So it's really important to have, you know, security software and having a sort of a good, diligent approach to try to prevent this from happening as well. And of course, on the other side, you know, the more social engineering side, you've got a lot of spam going on. You've got penny stocks being advertised. When you had the Stormwind Trojan, for instance, a lot of that initially was sending out penny stocks across the world. You know, if you want to quote Barnum there, it'd be suckers born every minute. And easily enough, someone would accidentally click on these things or would fall prey to this seemingly convincing email.
Right.
And it doesn't take very much at all.
Right. So, all right, we've talked enough about the attacks. What can kind of the good guys do to get more aggressive in stopping this? It seems like we know so much about these organizations and how they're structured and all this stuff, but it still seems like we're not going after them. Is it because of is it politics? Is it governments? Is it not enough money to go after them? You know, why aren't we doing more to stop this?
You know, I think the security industry and the government as a whole are doing the best they can, but there's a couple of factors to sort of take into account here. You've got, from the government standpoint, obviously, you know, many of the security vendors are working with their local governments and international governments to try to help stop some of this. We're sort of committed to that goal. Not just, you know, providing the solution, but to work on the back end. But it really has to be a two-pronged approach. And then even on the government side, you've got attackers that might reside in countries or localities that might be out of certain jurisdictions or, you know, it's sort of like an offshore bank account, for instance. They're a little bit harder to reach or they're harder to find in some stances. The other thing to also look at is in terms of the sheer number of activity and volume that's out there, it's a daunting problem to some degree. Now, you know, from a standpoint that from our side, okay, from say the security vendor side, for instance, we are committed to providing good quality code, and we probably get flogged for providing shaky signatures, for providing a bad quality product that might impact your machine. And we've seen examples of that in the past, over the last couple of years, where there's misdetections or false positives where you take a machine down, keeping the blue screen of death, if you will. And then you've got on the other side with the attackers where quality just doesn't matter. What really does matter is, you know, if I get something good enough and it's shaky quality, but if it's good enough to exploit a certain percentage of the people out there, well, hey, you know what, roll it out, right? And so what we need to do from that standpoint is look towards more smarter solutions, if you will. For example, on the bit difference side, we use a sort of heuristics technology to augment some of our other more traditional approaches, where, you know, the problem with traditional approaches that many of the longstanding sort of vendors out there that, you know, have is that it's based upon signatures. And the problem with signature-based detection is you need to know about the problem in order to fix the problem. But when you have this huge volume of influx of attacks that come in daily and are generated daily, the thing you need to do is to have smarter detection, so behavioral detection technologies, for instance. One thing that can be done is to have that heuristics look at the incoming samples, whether it's known or not, try to understand what it does in, a virtual environment. And then based upon that type of behavior, then you can pretty much tell whether it's going to be good or bad. I mean, if it looks and smells bad, it probably is.
But, right.
And that proactive approach is what's absolutely necessary in the market today in terms of protecting the user and being much more aggressive. It's not about just working with the government, but also about looking at technologies just to outpace and outsmart the attackers as well.
Right. So is it more – it sounds like you're saying that consumers and businesses are going to need more than just kind of like an antivirus, anti-malware, and anti-spam solution. It seems like that these solutions are going to have to get better in terms of how they're analyzing this kind of stuff. Is that right?
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that you need to consider is up to more recently, a lot of these solutions are pretty much a tit-for-tat approach, right? You've got an antivirus solution for antivirus, and you've got somebody's on a firewall for firewall, and, you know, and so forth. And so what we really need to do is look at it from a suite approach, a comprehensive approach, right? In my personal opinion, one of the critical things is sort of taking the concept of proactive protection to a much greater level. It's not just about providing the proactive security, the smarter solution that's on your system, but also providing that data integrity in case you do lose data from data loss, either through even personal mistakes or because of an attack, that you can actually recover this information, know what's been taken, and then protect yourself in that fashion. So it needs to be a comprehensive approach to solving the problem at hand, not
right.
Sort of a point-by-point method.
So is this something that could go away at some point? Like, let's look about, you know, 3-4 years down the road. Is this something that's going to get better, going to get worse? Or is it something that we can kind of maintain and control? And I guess the ultimate question is how do you, if it's all about the money, is there a way that you can cut off the money flow so that these groups decide that it's not worth the investment?
You know, I hate to say this. I mean, I would like to, in an ideal world, think that this will go away. But at the end of the day, I think this is just going to be part of normal everyday life. If you remove, you know, if you go from a high level, these internet threats is probably no different than crime of centuries old. And you've got the robberies, the frauds, the cons that's been out there throughout ages. And this is just another way of getting there. As the internet, you know, continues to develop, there will be easier and smarter ways for these people to do what they need to do to steal money from innocent bystanders. And it's just going to be part of the daily internet ecosystem. The only thing that really can be done is for the users out there to be much more proactive, keep their systems up to date, subscribe to some smart best practices. You know, don't click on this is familiar. Don't click on emails from people unknown. And even though there are emails or messages from over IM, say through IM attack from people that are known, you have to think twice in terms of what that message is. Is this something that person normally conveys to me or sends me an email? I mean, sometimes I'm just sitting there and I'll get IMs from people that are on my IM list. And the problem is these people aren't sending it to me. It's that they've been exploited and
right.
They're sending messages, right? So to go back to your original question, the answer, you know, unfortunately is no. It's not going to go away. It's just going to be much more of the same. You just probably see much more attacks coming through, albeit, you know, they'll try to be more silent about it and try to be smart about it. And it'll just take a cooperative effort from government, from the security vendors like Bitdefender to sort of provide that sort of solution on the end user standpoint, but it also takes the end user themselves out there who get on the internet and connect to be much more diligent in practice in how they use this medium.
All right. Vince, thank you very much for joining us. That's all the time we've got today. Where can people go for more details on Bitdefender and start protecting themselves?
Absolutely. So thanks for having me. And for more information, people can actually go to www.bitdefender.com and learn more about our solutions as well as the various ways that they can protect themselves against these unsavory attacks and people out there.
All right. Thanks also to the listeners of Network World Panorama. You can always find more Network World podcasts at www.networkworld.com/podcasts. I'm Keith Shaw. Thanks for listening.